Ave Maria in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Welcome to Ave Maria in the Afternoon, examining the world through the lens of faith from the heart of the Church to help us navigate the culture. Here's Dr. Marcus Peter.
Good afternoon, and thank you very much for joining us on this hour of Ave Maria in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. Every Tuesday, we're blessed to be joined by my friend Dr. Greg Popchuk of CatholicCounselors.com. He and his bride Lisa also together co-host More to Life, the wondrous call-in program that's aired on EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. There's nothing quite like it. And so we're going to start talking about how, as parents, we tend to assume a closeness with our children that isn't necessarily there. In fact, it's incumbent upon parents to realize that children do, in fact, know their parents love them, and that children are given expressly the expression of care and affirmation from their parents, because the degree of closeness we enjoy with our children isn't rooted in a feeling or a general sense of things. It really has to do with investment, scheduled investment of time and energy into the working of that relationship. Greg has taught me quite a lot about this, and he shares all of this with us today. We go on from there to speak with conference leaders Anne Reeser and Patricia Sayers, Catholic nurses leading with faith and transforming healthcare, because this month, Madonna University in Livonia, Michigan, is hosting the National Association of Catholic Nurses Conference. And they're trying to focus on what it means to lead with faith while transforming healthcare, especially in terms of a reclamation of an objective transcendental morality, an anthropology that sees the human person as possessing divinely endowed dignity. And so Anne Reeser and Patricia Sayers will join us with the details about the conference and also how they're attempting to reshape the healthcare conversation and the, like I mentioned, the morality of healthcare, the very practice of seeing individuals as participants in their own work of healthcare and therefore healthcare providers as instruments of God in alleviating suffering in illnesses. And then finally, we will visit a conversation I had with Dr. Rachel Ferguson at Acton University 2025, addressing the problem of homelessness. Now, this is a challenge in every city and every nation across the world, but is there a solution that begins at the local level? Can we perhaps see fruit by decentralization and some policies to that light? All this we'll talk about after the headlines.
Thank you, Marcus, and good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Tuesday, July 1st. It's the feast of St. Junipero Serra. And today's news is brought to you by Ave Maria Family of Funds at AveMariaFunds.com. The big, beautiful bill faces an uncertain future in the House after squeaking through the Senate. House Speaker Mike Johnson managed to get it passed by a razor-thin margin after several intense debates and revisions. The conservative House Freedom Caucus already says the Senate version of the GOP bill would raise the federal deficit more than they'd like. Televangelist Jimmy Swaggart is dead at the age of 90. He died after suffering cardiac arrest earlier this month. Swaggart was one of the pioneers in bringing the church into people's homes through television. He founded the Sun Life Broadcasting Network and the Family Worship Center in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, both of which his family still runs. The former Bishop of Lansing, Michigan has died. Bishop Emeritus Carl Mengeling died peacefully this morning at the age of 94. He served the diocese from 1996 to 2008. His successor, Bishop Earl Boyer, remembers him as an incredible blessing to the diocese, especially because of the joy he brought and his incredible enthusiasm. Bishop Mengeling's visitation and funeral scheduled for next week. The details can be found in the slider at AveMariaRadio.net. And today is National Postal Worker Day. We're celebrating the folks who, without fail, deliver our mail 6 days a week. It's estimated that hundreds of thousands of U.S. postal workers walk an average of 4 to 8 miles each day as they make their deliveries. In order to thank them for their work, you might consider offering a treat today which also happens to be National Ginger Snap Day. From the AveMariaRadio.net news desk, I'm Dan McGraw.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Vita. As parents, we tend to assume a closeness with our children that sometimes might not necessarily be there. We think, you know, of course they know I love them, of course we're close, I'm their parent, but that degree of closeness that we enjoy with our children isn't rooted in a feeling or even our general sense of things. There's more to it. Dr. Greg Popchek, founder and director of CatholicCounselors.com, and he and his bride, Lisa, co-host More to Life, that airs on EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. And they're also the developers of the Catholic HOM app, a resource that helps Catholic families thrive. Greg, great to speak with you. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Marcus. Good to be here.
Well, it's always good to be to connect with you about these very important topics. And I want to preface by sharing how I learned from Lisa and you when we were pregnant with our first that the investment, especially on my part, to schedule and to quite literally pour my effort and attention into time in that relationship would yield fruit in the long run. And so I've lived by that, and I just want to open there by asking you to expand upon that principle that you taught me years ago.
Sure. So, you know, we do have a tendency to assume as parents that the relationship with our kids is a given. Mm. You know, they live under our roof, we take care of them, they know we love them, certainly, and, you know, if we're not fighting, then we assume the relationship is good. But there are actually certain things that we can look to see how close our kids feel toward us, and that's important, especially as Catholic parents, because that gives the strength of our relationship is what gives us the ability to mentor and disciple our kids into a faithful adulthood, right? So, for example, you can know how close your kids feel to you to the degree that they are affectionate with you and open to affection from you. Number two, the degree to which the child accepts and even regularly seeks out your direction and guidance. You know, how often do they ask you questions about the stuff that they're going through, or how much are they willing to hear what you have to say? Mm-hmm. And then finally, the degree to which a child is both open to spending time with you and initiates requests to spend time with you even. So, you know, those three things give you a clearer sense of how close does your child actually feel to you. Now, you know, if you were saying, well, gosh, I feel like maybe we could use some work in those areas, mm-hmm. that's okay. You know, I mean, like any other relationship, all relationships take work.
Right.
And so there are four things that we can do as parents, and you were alluding to this in your opening comments, that enable us to really strengthen that attachment that we have with our kids that then opens their hearts to the things we have to share with them and the our ability to disciple them into a faithful adulthood, faithful mm-hmm. lifehood. And so the first one is actually prioritizing family time. You know, making sure that we are getting that time with them. In fact, I know when our oldest were little, and, you know, when they were misbehaving and my early attempts or initial attempts to correct them weren't working out so well, mm-hmm. one of the first things I would do is ask myself, have I been spending time with them this week? You know, have I maybe been working too much on a particular project or maybe traveling a little bit, and maybe I need to invest a little bit more time in this relationship because they're not seeing where I'm coming from and the things that I'm trying to do aren't landing the way I wanted them to. And inevitably, if I put a little bit more of that time in, their behavior improved, we got along better, and things were just in a better place. So really looking at that, how much am I prioritizing that family time? Secondly, you know, being able to prioritize generous affection and affirmation. You know, as Christian parents, we're called by the Catechism to image the love of God mm-hmm. and make it, you know, tangible in our family lives. And, you know, the Word of God became flesh and lived among us so that, in large part, we could experience God's love through our senses.
Right.
Right? We would know that God wasn't just a God that loved us from a distance and provided for us generally. He was there, real and incarnate. And in a similar way, we can mirror God's love to our children when we are generously affectionate and affirming and complimentary. Thirdly, you know, really listening and attending to their needs and teaching them how to attend to the needs of those around them. It's not all just about us taking care of them and chasing them around and, you know, saying, what can I do for you? What can I do? It's about really creating that community in the family where we look to take care of each other's needs.
Right.
And really affirm each other. And then finally, what we call discipleship discipline. So it's an approach to discipline that makes it safe to make mistakes in my presence. You know, I'm not encouraging my kids to make mistakes, mm-hmm. but I'm making it safe to make mistakes and to mess up, and because they know that the way I'm going to correct them is through, as St. John Bosco put it, through reason, religion, and loving kindness.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm going to identify the intention behind what they were trying to do and teach them a better way to do it instead of shaming them for getting it wrong.
Right.
And those four things really facilitate that kind of relationship where kids are, you know, open to our affection and even, you know, seeking affection from us, the degree to which they are willing to accept and ask for our guidance, and the degree to which they're open to spending time with us, even ask for more time with us.
These four things, first of all, they seem very commonsensical as you start doing them, so I want to say thank mm-hmm. you for them. But I think the other thing too, Greg, is one thing I've learned in enacting these, well, Stephanie and I have both learned this, is even after you find yourself doing all four, you're going back to the first, you're going back to the second, and so it mm-hmm. becomes the family habit.
That's right. And well, and this is all, you know, those four things that I described are part of what we call the rite of Christian relationship mm-hmm. in this liturgy of domestic church life. It's a way of living habits in the family that allow us to experience the faith as the source of the warmth in our home. And this is the kind of stuff that we teach on Catholic Home, Catholic HOM Households on Mission, the app that really encourage families to cultivate these habits and keep coming back to them over and over again as a way of encountering Christ's love more meaningfully in our homes mm-hmm. and sharing that love with each other and then bearing witness to that love in the world. I mean, let's face it. You know, let's even take a look at that first practice, prioritizing family time. The world does not want us to prioritize family time. You know, we live in a FOMO culture, the fear of missing out, where if we're not scheduled 3,000 things on a Wednesday afternoon, then our kids are not going to grow up and go to Harvard, you know. And they're going to be homeless, and it's going to be all our fault. You know, if we just think that we have to prioritize activity over intimacy, and this really stands in the face of that. The idea of generous affection and affirmation. I grew up at a time where parents were afraid to be too affectionate or affirming because I don't want to give the kid a big head, you know.
Mm.
But the reality is we spoil children. Kids are like fruit, you know. You spoil them by letting them sit on the shelf and ignoring them. You know, the reality is we were created for affection. We were created for communion. And when parents are doing this is a spiritual exercise every bit as much as it is a good parenting practice. Same with the other practices that I mentioned before.
So for everyone listening right now, especially if these four steps are completely novel to them, to simply start by saying, I want to start prioritizing family time, whatever my means are, you and Lisa provide very prudential, incremental steps into doing things like this.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, none of this stuff has to happen overnight. You know, this is a lifelong process of really learning how to live God's love in our home and in mm-hmm. all of our relationships. And so, you know, we would suggest that, for example, with prioritizing family time, just start with, you know, asking the question, you know, how could we get a little bit of time today?
Mm.
You know, hey, let's get out our phones and look at what's our schedule tomorrow. How could we get just a little bit of time together, even 15 minutes, just to hang out with each other? And do something fun, or get some prayer time, you know, or whatever it is that we want to do, but just to really be intentional about making some kind of time to actually connect. Because even just asking that question starts to orient your mind toward prioritizing those relationships,
right,
as opposed to just assuming they're happening because we happen to be in the car for 10 minutes while we're bussing the kids from this to that.
Right, and so that's a great place to start. In fact, from there, you really do get creative about building that small family liturgy of prayer. Now, we're down to about 20 seconds. Greg, if people want to learn more, how can they find out more about the liturgy of domestic church life?
We would love to have people join the Catholic Home app. That's Catholic HOM, stands for Households on Mission, and it's a place where they can get daily parent coaching from Lisa and I and our whole team of pastoral counselors, plus tons of creative resources to make living the faith at home simple and fun and dynamic. So check it out. Download the Catholic HOM app today.
Greg, I stand by it. You and Lisa are a tremendous gift to the church. My guest has been Dr. Greg Popchak. He and his bride Lisa co-host More to Life, which is a call-in program that centers on marriage and the family, produced by Ave Maria Radio and broadcast over EWTN. They also produce the Catholic HOM app. Download it. Find out about how we can have our domestic churches flourish and thrive. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Vita.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company that pays for things that violate your conscience? There's an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful individuals and families that never share into immoral medical services, all while saving you money with prices starting as low as $85 per month for singles and $512 for families. Never fund another abortion with your healthcare dollars. Call 844-313-4999 to learn more.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria Florida, a big kind of small town, where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at AveMaria.com. That's AveMaria.com.
Maybe you've been hearing a lot about the need to make a spiritual communion while participating from home in a live-streamed or broadcast Mass. There's more to it than reciting the act of spiritual communion. We should begin by having sincere repentance for our sins and affirming our belief that Christ's death redeemed us. Next, we call to mind the spiritual gifts found in Christ's sacrifice and thank God earnestly for them. Now we are disposed to pray the traditional prayer of spiritual communion. Jesus, I embrace you and unite myself wholly to you.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Vita. This month, Madonna University in Livonia, Michigan is hosting the National Association of Catholic Nurses Conference, focusing on what it means to lead with faith while transforming healthcare. Conference leaders Ann Reeser and Patricia Sayers join us with details. Ann is the treasurer of the National Association of Catholic Nurses. Patricia is the former president of the National Association for Catholic Nurses. Ann and Patricia, thank you for joining us. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much for having us.
So I want to...
Yes, thank you.
I want to begin by, I'll go back and forth. So I'd like to start with you, Patricia. Given that you are the former president of the association, to talk about what the association does in terms of its mission and therefore the conference in revitalizing the Judeo-Christian conversation and language in the work of healthcare.
Yes, of course. Our mission is... very much shared among Catholic nurses, both internationally and nationally. Essentially, the association was our intent is to embody the ministry of Catholic nursing and to uphold the moral principles of the magisterium of the Catholic Church. This is quite a chore today in modern healthcare. Mm-hmm. We bring people of different backgrounds together. Who share Roman Catholic values and provide opportunities for them to promote the moral principles within Catholicism and to develop professionally as Catholic nurses.
So, Anne, in your work presently, as you're seeing the continued decline of a biblical worldview of the human person, in particularly healthcare, as it's becoming more and more mechanized, talk about the need for nurses and healthcare professionals to reclaim a view of the dignity of the human person.
Yes, that's what the purpose of our conference is. As you said, leading with faith and transforming healthcare. We want to bring the nurses from their regular professions and give them a good standpoint from the Roman Catholic faith so we can deepen their faith and deepen their commitment to Catholic nursing. So with this conference, we can educate the nurses so that they will have the information to be able to utilize this information in their professional lives and in their everyday lives, and to help so that their children can see as well, and to educate their children and take part as leaders in their communities so that they can be policy changers and they can take the lead as the professionals that they are.
Right.
And help the nurses that are new nurses coming into our profession when they have dilemmas, when they have situations that they don't know where to turn. NACN USA wants to be that foundation for mm-hmm. them so that they can turn to us as the organization to support them in the dilemmas that they have. We were given a charge by Pope Pius the 11th for nurses way back in 1935 to have nurses come together in associations to help them so that they can face these dilemmas that they will find all the time morally, such as euthanasia and population control, so that we can come together and follow the magisterium, like Patricia just said,
right,
and have a better standpoint and a better basis to draw from.
So from there, Patricia, if you could just give everyone an overview of this conference, what can be gained from it, why especially nurses, but also healthcare professionals in general, ought to find out about it and get involved.
The content that's going to be presented hits just about all the major categories of nursing. We try to speak to nursing in a very broad way. For example, practice, education, administration, policy. And we have Catholic leaders from across the country and from multiple universities presenting, and they're really the leaders in their field in Catholicism. So the lineup is fabulous, and we also are going to be celebrating the schools that are beginning to work with us. We want to reach out and with our membership to both dioceses and parishes, and to beyond now also to schools and to agencies mm-hmm. where the nurses are. So, and we encourage them to come because we have practice content, we have leadership content, we have administrative positions and content to present. So it's I find that when we all get together as a group, realize the thread now is our Catholicism,
mm-hmm.
that we are there to support each other at all these different levels as Catholic nurses, and to be able to stand up for religious liberty, right of conscience, in a situation where many times that is challenged. And when you leave these conferences that we have, that is really the takeaway message that the nurses have. And they usually are anxious then to come yet again.
Well, that's truly consoling to hear. And so, Anne, I'd like you to just build on that a little bit by this language that NACN USA utilizes in thinking about nurses, you know, language of calling, vocation, and apostolate of charity. The individual unaffiliated with NACN thinks of medical care, healthcare, as a very mechanistic utilitarian process, but you're trying to change that language. Can you just comment on that briefly?
Yes, we're trying to help nurses uphold their moral principles
mm-hmm.
so that when they're in their work situations and they come across these dilemmas, which I am a hospitalist, so I know of these dilemmas that come about every day, and you have to be able to stop and think and have a good basis of support so that you have your Catholic foundation in order that you bring this to the bedside. And this is what, again, Pope Pius the 11th was saying when he said nurses don't only provide bodily care. He also wanted them to provide spiritual nourishment so that they take their vocation as a sacred vocation and not just a medical vocation, so that we bring all of this in and take care of the entire person and the entire, their family, the patient, and other nurses in the process. So that way we can be everything for everyone, mm-hmm. but from a Catholic standpoint.
Patricia, if you can just springboard off of that to comment on why a Catholic who holds a Judeo-Christian ethos in medical healthcare, especially a Catholic one, tends to be better as a nurse than one who's simply materialist and utilitarian.
Well, I think that the core of it is the focus of Christine Niles' presentation with our nurses, and that is that we see Christ, we encourage people to see Christ in each of our patients, and that we honor life from conception to natural death, that we are not in what you might call the throwaway society in terms of how we look at health and wellness. We support health at every phase of life, mm-hmm. as I said, from conception to natural death. And we encourage people to get involved in pro-life activities, and we are involved in, there's lots of opportunities for the nurses to come to get formally engaged in Catholic nursing endeavors.
Well, ladies, I want to say thank you very much for making the time to speak with us. This has been a blessing.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you. Yes, we're honored. Thank you so much.
My guests have been Ann Risa, Treasurer of the National Association of Catholic Nurses, and Patricia Sayers, former President of the National Association for Catholic Nurses. And they are hosting a conference this month in Madonna University in Livonia, Michigan. And it's for Catholic nurses. It's called Catholic Nurses Leading with Faith and Transforming Healthcare. Please find out more at nacn-usa.org. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Beckway Door is a top provider of garage doors as well as home entry, patio, and storm doors. Locally owned since 1978, we give free, no-pressure quotes at prices 20% lower than most competitors and often provide same-day service for garage door repairs. Mention Ave Maria Radio for 10% off the replacement or service of your garage door or the installation of new exterior doors. Visit BeckwayDoor.com. That's BeckwayDoor.com.
Ave Maria School of Law is the Roman Catholic law school in the United States. Consistently ranked in the Princeton Review as one of the best and most conservative law schools, as well as pre-law's most devout law school. Ave Maria School of Law provides a traditional legal education while emphasizing how the law intersects with the Catholic intellectual tradition and natural law philosophy. Ave Maria School of Law, unabashedly Catholic, consistently excellent. For more information, visit avemarialaw.edu.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
On the next Epiphany.
Hi, Vanessa Denha-Garmo here. It's time for Parish of the Week Wednesday. We'll be joined by Father Tomey, the pastor of St. Mary Our Lady of the Snows in Milford. Trevor Polo will Protect Life Michigan. We'll talk about the Life Advocate Intensive Premier Pro-Life Activism Training for high school and college students in Michigan.
Epiphany, weekdays at noon on Ave Maria Radio.
Why is prayer a battle? Prayer is both a gift of grace and a determined response on our part, the Catholic Catechism tells us. It takes effort. Who is the battle against? Against ourselves and against the devil, who does all he can to turn us away from prayer and God and union with God. If we do not live habitually according to the Spirit of Christ, we cannot pray habitually in His name. We pray as we live, says the Catechism, and we live as we pray. One of the most universal difficulties in prayer is distraction. The simple and most effective answer to distraction is to turn back to our heart, for distraction reveals to what we are attached. This humble awareness can prompt us to offer our hearts to the Lord for purification. This is Peggy Stanton, and this is the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
St. Therese once told her sister Celine that when we trust ourselves and not God, our soul becomes barren and incapable of virtue. Her remedy? External works of charity. We all try to do it on our own sometimes, without asking for God's help. At St. Paul Evangelization, we suggest sharing the gospel with someone who needs it. Check out streetevangelization.com to find a team near you where you can share the love of Jesus. If there isn't one in your area yet, perhaps God is calling you to start a team in your city. To learn more, visit streetevangelization.com.
Ave Maria in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter, coming to you from Acton University 2025. You've been hearing me cover this event and talk about it for the past week now, and so I want to highly encourage you, if you can make it out here, if you, your spouse, your friends can make it out here, this is a wondrous event of exchanges of ideas for the sake of building a free and virtuous society in ordered liberty. Joining me to have a conversation about a course that she's teaching here is Dr. Rachel Ferguson. She is Professor of Business and Assistant Dean, Director of the Center for Free Enterprise at Concordia University, Chicago, and easily one of the more prominent professors here in this program. Rachel, always a joy to reconnect with you. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be back.
I was looking forward to talking with you, especially since I caught a little bit of your lecture. And this is a grand question. We're not going to solve this in 10 minutes.
Sure.
But poverty, is it solvable?
Yeah. Yeah, I did one talk on homelessness, mm-hmm. on whether that's solvable, and I did another talk on more general poverty. And I think that there are so many, there's a lot of categorization,
yep.
that you need to do, right?
Yep.
So there's different, when we say homelessness, for instance, that's a huge umbrella term. When we say poverty, that's a huge umbrella term. What is the actual population that we're talking about?
Right.
As you break down the various populations, there are often solutions,
right?
If someone's homeless because of high housing prices, there's actually a reason we have high housing prices. You know, it has to do with the inability to build and zoning and regulations, so we can address that.
Right.
But other people are homeless because they're mentally ill or because they're addicted to drugs, and there's many other categories.
Right.
And so then we have to sort of take each one in its turn. I do think we will always have some homeless people and we will always have some impoverished people, but there are many, let's call it low-hanging fruit. There's a lot of low-hanging fruit where either a change in policy or a change in the way that we do our charity could make a huge difference in terms of transforming people out of poverty as opposed to just helping them survive in poverty. And so, yeah, I think that a lot of it is solvable, even if some will always exist.
You know, Coburn and Fickett in the book When Helping Hurts, they talk about how poverty is, at its core, a relational problem.
That's right.
And it's so easy for us to categorize it as if it's a purely fiscal problem, because then that dehumanizes the problem. We are separated from it.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're talking about here is a rethinking of charity, a rethinking of how we even think about welfare, and therefore the structures that we put in place to aid these people.
Yeah, that's right. As a matter of fact, one of the things that I hadn't really thought about before until I started looking at homelessness is what a difference it makes that families are so small.
Mm.
People are lonely. I mean, we are living in the loneliest time in human history.
Yeah.
There's more people who live alone than ever before. And if you do run into problems, it's not like you have five or six brothers and sisters most of the time,
right.
you know, or cousins, right? Or, you know, big families that you can fall back on.
Yeah.
Instead, you may only have one. And so if that one isn't interested in helping you, or maybe they're worn out, you know, if you're dealing with a drug addiction or something like that, you're kind of out of options.
Right.
And that's just one example of things that are really, as you say, more relational than material.
Right.
Many of the people, I had someone say to me last night, if somebody walks up to me on the street, the one thing I do, you know, asking for money, the one thing I do know about them is that they're completely alone. They have no one left. Now, sometimes, you can remind someone that they don't have no one left. So Marvin Alasky in his book, The Tragedy of American Compassion, his first mark of compassion is affiliation. You have to stop and say, hey, you know, what's going on? Where's your family? Have you called your mom? Have you, you know, do they know where you're at? Sometimes people are ashamed. It's been too long. They need encouragement. They need someone to help them negotiate through perhaps painful family things. But they actually are able to reconnect. In other cases, not. And in some cases, you actually want to disaffiliate people from family members who perhaps are also drug users, for instance. And so there has to be the personal involvement of the person who's helping, as opposed to just, here's a box of food and next in line, right? You have to know the person's situation to say, actually, you need to stay away from that family member, or actually, let me help you reconcile with that family member, right? That's a really good example of how the relational nature of the work matters so much. But in the mid 19th century, we got into more of a scientistic, you know, sort of approach where you became a number and you became a person in a line. And I'm just kind of operating on a handout mentality. And we're sadly still recovering from that. We have so much work to do in terms of our paradigm of intervening with the poor.
You know, if I may quote you, you use the word unconscionable when it comes to the way we think about and develop our structures for welfare. And I think you're completely spot on in an article you published in the past. And Marvin essentially talks about that as well, that we need to start rethinking the notion of social cohesion, which is what you're alluding to here, when it comes to our policies and frameworks about meeting the needs of people who are in need, especially with subsidiarity instead of overt centralization.
Right. Yeah, so I don't think we realize how much our systems can sort of swoop in and undermine the natural relationships that people already have. Now, I'm sure your listeners are probably already aware, but there's something called the marriage penalty, right? Mm, so if you have social benefits and you get married, you will often lose them.
Yep.
It's so precipitously that you can't recover, which makes it economically irrational to marry.
Right.
Now, you can say from the outside, well, you should just get married anyway, and, you know, so forth. But we have to remember that when you are poor, your time horizon is very short.
That's right.
Right? You're
That's
often
right. You're
thinking about,
20 years.
Exactly. And you may even think, I use this example all the time. My friend in St. Louis, who leads a group of young people from a really, really bad neighborhood in St. Louis, was once sitting around with a group of young men. He was teaching them how to pray. And he said, we're going to do prayer requests, and I'm going to pray for you. And they just weren't familiar with this practice.
Uh-huh.
And so he said, what do you want me to pray for you? And they kind of felt confused. And so there was a long pause. And then finally someone said, well, pray that I make it till I'm 21. And it was like, what? You know, well, he believed, and probably somewhat accurately, that the possibility of him dying before he was 21 was very high. As they went around the circle, every other boy said, pray that I make it till I'm 21. Well, imagine trying to train up a child in the way he should go when that child doesn't even really believe that they're going to make it to adulthood.
Right?
Oh my goodness, that's going to change your incentive structure. That's going to change the whole way you go about life. And so you really have to surround a person like that with love and sort of walk through life with them in order to impart to them the theological virtue of hope, right? That things may be different, and actually the way you live your life can affect that it'll be different.
Right.
And so that's just a huge paradigm shift in the mind of a person who's living in a really, really destabilized neighborhood. And that's where subsidiarity does come in. You absolutely need to have those personal relationships.
Right.
There's no government office that's going to be able to change that mindset
in
a young man's mind.
That's right.
Yeah.
In fact, this goes back to Coben and Fickett about how it's not just material poverty that these communities are facing. You know, like, this is a reality of social and spiritual poverty.
Right.
And the only remedy is not greater government overreach. The only remedy is, especially local churches, but local communities creating livable, workable solutions.
Yeah. I had a really interesting conversation this morning with a attendee here at ACTN who worked on the homelessness problem in Iowa City. And he actually did some amazing things. They involved understanding the homeless population, you know, in terms of the different groups, you know, whether they're veterans or et cetera. So he really needed to understand that. And then he was describing how everybody had to be involved in the solution.
Right.
The churches, the police, the heads of the homeless shelters, the city council, everybody had to be on board with the solution. And they were actually able to reduce costs by 90% because you can embrace someone with a solution that doesn't involve them going to the emergency room every time they get cold,
right?
Which is costing us hundreds of thousands of dollars. We don't realize how wasteful it is.
Yeah.
But you can't really come up with that solution if you don't have that togetherness in the community. And so it can be hard to generate, particularly in big cities, mm-hmm. where people are thinking in terms of hundreds of thousands of people. You can't think that way.
Right.
And so that's why I'm starting to really focus on neighborhoods
mm-hmm.
and the idea of the neighborhood where, hey, what can we do on this block? What can we do in this 4 to 6 block area where the people here, because of gang territories and so forth, they don't even really leave this 4 to 6 block area. It becomes kind of a bubble, a little world of its own.
Right.
And so
they build little fiefdoms.
Yeah, a little fiefdom. And you may be afraid. Let's say you have a job a mile away, but you're afraid to walk through the next neighborhood because you're not protected in that neighborhood. People in middle and upper income neighborhoods
don't have any idea, right?
We don't have any idea what it's like. And so now that we're starting to gain a better understanding, then can we come into a neighborhood and bring the solution on the ground where it becomes real for people?
Yeah.
It becomes a real option. So if you know, Love the Lou in St. Louis is building community gardens, a kid can be walking down the street on a Saturday morning and go, what's going on here? And they can say, hey, if you want to be paid, you can be in charge of the zucchinis. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that starts to build a set of skills in a child. And if you say, look, oh, there's some corporation 5 miles away that wants to pay for you to go to college, you might as well be saying yada, yada, yada. I mean, it just means nothing to a child in that situation. It could mean something in a few years if they've come up through the community garden, but it's not meaning anything to them at the time because they haven't hardly gone outside of that small neighborhood.
My guest is Dr. Rachel Ferguson, Professor of Business and Assistant Dean, Director of the Center for Free Enterprise at Concordia University, Chicago. We're talking about the poverty problem, the homelessness problem, and virtuous free solutions to these issues. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Experience an unforgettable evening with Grammy Award-winning artist Rebecca St. James. The concert is Tuesday, July 29th at 7 p.m. at St. Isidore Church in Macomb. Tickets start at just $23. Presented by St. Kieran and St. Isidore Catholic Churches. Purchase tickets online at stkieran.org. That's stkieran.org. Don't miss your chance to see Rebecca St. James live in concert.
Support for this Ave Maria radio program comes in part by the non-for-profit St. Anthony Services. Are you shopping for mortgage products, Catholic investing, Catholic health, real estate, or estate planning? StAnthonyServices.org can help you find a Catholic professional for these needs. They regularly connect faithful citizens with faith-based professionals that share our Christian values. More information at StAnthonyServices.org or 877-LIFE-US1.
Hello, Steve Ray here from Footprints of God Pilgrimages. Want to celebrate some amazing anniversaries this year in France? We'll visit Normandy Beach to celebrate our heroic military for the 80th anniversary of D-Day. Also, the 100th anniversary of the canonization of St. Teresa of Lisieux. Join us this October for our Saints and Shrines of France and a visit to the newly renovated Notre Dame Cathedral.
Find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at AveMariaRadio.net.
This week on Christ is the Answer, we continue Father John's teaching series on the Ten Commandments. After freeing the Hebrew people from slavery in Egypt, the Lord gave Moses the new rule to which the people of God would abide as part of his new covenant. The most recognizable of these rules are the Ten Commandments. Join us this week as Father John expounds on the 7th, 10th, 6th, and 9th commandments, asking the question, why be good? Tune in for Christ is the Answer Monday through Fridays at 11 a.m. on Ave Maria Radio.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchak.
Parents often complain that their kids either don't do their chores or don't do a good job with them. How can parents teach kids to do chores well? The easiest way to teach kids healthy attitudes toward chores is to create family work rituals where families do chores together. Daily family work rituals give parents and kids an opportunity to work side by side, learning good stewardship, responsibility, and teamwork. Family work rituals provide on-the-job training for chores so that when kids eventually get their own chores, they know what's expected of them and how to do them well. That's one reason family rituals for working together are such an important part of Catholic family life. To discover more ways your family can celebrate the liturgy of domestic church life, check out the newest editions of Parenting with Grace and visit CatholicCounselors.com. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peet. I'm talking with Dr. Rachel Ferguson, director of the Free Enterprise Center at Concordia University, Chicago, and she's teaching courses at Acton University 2025, where we are coming to you from. She's teaching Homelessness, Is It Solvable? And Poverty Alleviation, Demystifying the Neighborhood. So, Rachel, when I walked into your lecture on poverty, there were a few tremendously salient points you were making, and as I walked in, you made this brilliant analogy of this Disney movie, this Pixar movie. Mm-hmm. So I figure let's begin there for the sake of illustration and talk about the principle behind it.
Yeah. So shameless self-promotion for a moment. I wrote a book called Black Liberation Through the Marketplace. It's very cheap on Amazon for your listeners. We made sure it was very easy to get. Uh-huh. I think it's like $11 or something. So I hope you read it. But in there, I do go over the ways that those neighborhoods, those communities that we were talking about were really sort of shattered and scattered by our terrible, overreaching progressive federal policies. Yep. And one of those policies was the federal highway system and the way that that was implemented. And the scene in Cars is so great because Sally, the girl car, explains to Lightning McQueen what happened and why the town is a ghost town.
Uh-huh.
And it's a beautiful scene where they kind of show the history of the state highway system. And she said people didn't drive to make good time. They drove to have a good time. You know, you'd pull over and go to the local diner.
Uh-huh.
I did this with my father. I mean, I remember these sorts of roads. But she said what happened was as the federal highway system came through with its very straight roads that didn't come, you know, didn't really follow the lay of the land, blew through the mountains, things like that. All of those rural towns became ghost towns.
Right.
They depended on the traffic of the state highway. And then, of course, in the cities, so that was the damage out in the rural areas.
Right.
But in the cities, the highways were often run through the neighborhood with the lowest tax base, right? Well,
right.
What's the neighborhood with the lowest tax base going to be? It's mm-hmm. probably going to be your Latino or your Black neighborhood, depending on where you're at in the country. And the problem with that is that, particularly in the case of Black Americans, they had actually built a lot of social capital.
That's right.
You had the Black church, you had fraternal associations. I mean, 50% of Black men were in fraternal associations at the turn of the century. It's like incredible stuff. They had high literacy rates, they had, you know, all of these institutions, and also, of course, Black businesses.
Right.
And so as these highways came through, they kind of mowed these areas down.
Yeah.
And then it created this huge concrete wall, right, between the Black part of town and the white part of town, or out west, the Latino part and the white part. And what that meant is that your economic networks are now divided.
Mm-hmm.
So not only have you undermined the sort of the core of the community, the business core, but you've also divided access to the employment networks that were existing on the other side of the highway. And this was very much done on purpose. We have the meeting minutes that we can read and all the terrible things that were said about these parts of town. But what a lot of those people in those municipal meetings didn't realize is that Black Americans in the 1950s were on their way out of poverty.
Exactly.
Poverty was going way down in the Black community very, very quickly, precipitously.
And if I may interrupt, social cohesion, social capital, social trust.
High marriage rates, high employment rates.
High.
Yes, really strong church community, et cetera. I mean, you saw that in the civil rights movement.
That's right.
How are you going to do the Montgomery bus boycott where you have to drive each other to work for 381 days?
Right.
You're going to do it because you all know each other from church.
That's right.
You know, and so you create these systems. It's really amazing. It's kind of a feat of project management when you think about it. But it really has to do with the social cohesion. That's absolutely right. Social capital. And so what we see is not just the federal highway system, but urban renewal, FHA redlining, right? We can go through a lot of these, and we can see that these communities took hit after hit after hit after hit, and then we're surprised suddenly that we have these sort of ghettoized communities with those who are least able to get out, sort of trapped there, and now we're stuck with all of the problems of poverty and destabilization that we now have. And as you mentioned before, the perverse incentives of the welfare state just made it that much worse in terms of both marriage and work being highly disincentivized by our system. And so on the one hand, you do have these systemic causes, and I'm willing to say that. This is systemic injustice. On the other hand, over decades, it causes cultural problems.
Yes.
Right? And no one's denying that. So, you know, if you lose fathers, you lose the skill of fatherhood.
Right.
Right? And now you've got to relearn all of that.
Right.
And so you do have real cultural loss
right.
that has to be regained. That's going to take generations to happen.
And if I may ask you to build on that, you know, Seth Kaplan talks about how, and you know, this is one of the core points you make, that the solution has never been top-down centralized solutions. It's always horizontal solutions, right?
Right.
And so, like you said, you lose fathers, you lose the skill of fatherhood, but you also, therefore, lose the skill of wifehood, marriage. You
yes.
lose the skill of childhood because you don't have a father to hold you morally accountable. So all of a sudden, it's not just grander social cohesion, it's nuclear social cohesion that's,
yeah.
that's completely fragmented.
Yeah, and what I've seen, and I've been around inner city neighborhoods all my life. My father was an evangelical minister, and we went into those neighborhoods ourselves, and I had foster brothers, etc., from those neighborhoods. And what I found is that the institution of marriage was really just completely gone.
Yeah.
It's amazing how fast it went. I mean, really, it's like conservatives say, it's a really good conservative insight, which is that institutions are very hard to build and very easy to destroy.
Yep.
Right? And so that's the danger of a revolutionary mindset. And that's really what happened in the sexual revolution. And it's been such a horrible loss for these children.
Yeah.
Because, of course, we know that the highest correlation with poverty, with criminality, with psychological problems is a broken family.
Yeah.
And I am not trying to denigrate all of the incredibly hardworking single mothers out
right,
there
right,
or
right.
in some cases single fathers.
Right.
But the truth is that it's just going to be much harder
yep.
to do that. And of course, there's also a correlation going the other way, right?
Right.
The person who doesn't get married is the person who already often has
right.
various issues, maybe with addiction or abuse in their past or whatever
right.
that makes it difficult. And so how can we realistically not blame people, but come around them and encourage them to sort of imagine a totally different future,
yeah.
a totally different world that they're not familiar with.
Yes.
And so I think for those of us who grew up around a lot of two-parent families, we sort of can't imagine
yeah.
what
yeah,
it would
yeah,
be
yeah.
like to have to completely rethink your world.
Yep.
And so in a lot of these neighborhoods, you say to young men, hey, you know, you have a baby with this woman, you love her, you live with her, why don't you marry her?
Yep.
You often find the young men kind of looking at you funny, like,
yep.
what are you even talking about? Right? It's,
yep.
it's not something they've seen. They haven't been to any weddings. They've been to a lot of funerals,
yep.
but not any weddings. And so how do you reinstitute that? And I think the Black Church could be a huge part of this. I think that just celebrating marriage and, you know, making a big deal out of it on social media. I think, anything we can do to start sort of reconstituting these institutions.
That's right.
There's really no other way. There's no different kind of family or something that's often dreamed of by progressives. It simply won't work.
Yep.
We need to go back to really what we were given in the Bible, right?
Yep.
Which is the family. Yeah.
You know, amazing that you bring that up because progressivism, by means of its policies, tends to have short time horizons in terms of execution. So it's about give the handout right now to alleviate the immediate problem.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you consider what you share about finding the Josephs in the community and rebuilding the community from the ground up because there are these opinion leaders, there are these mm-hmm. thought leaders, these influential individuals in these minority communities that can lead the charge. And again, we're talking about horizontal solutions here.
Right. And so just to let your audience know what finding the Josephs means.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sorry. Yes.
Yeah. No, I'll explain it, which is the great Bob Woodson of the Woodson Center in Washington, D.C., such a hero. And he uses the term Joseph, which is great, just based on the guy in the Bible, because only Joseph could interpret the dreams.
Yep.
And the Pharaoh needed somebody to figure out what these dreams were. But as soon as he did, he realized that he should put Joseph in charge of everything. And so the idea is there are those of us who are, quote unquote, pharaohs, not in the bad sense,
right.
but in the sense of people who have power,
influence.
Have money, have
yeah.
influence out in the larger society, but we don't actually have the local knowledge about the
yeah.
neighborhood. We don't have any credibility,
yeah.
right, because we didn't grow up in the neighborhood. And really, we have to find those Josephs, those are the neighborhood grassroots leaders,
yeah.
and empower them with our money and our networks, but really let them go, because
yeah.
they have the solution. And what I find is that a lot of middle and upper income people assume that everyone in the neighborhood is the same. You've got, if there's a lot of crime in a neighborhood, everyone's a criminal. No, it's actually a small percentage.
Right.
But a small percentage can do a lot of damage.
That's right.
Right? Or if there's a lot of struggling people in the neighborhood, there's nobody who's a leader. No, that's not true. On every block, there's some matriarch or some patriarch, right? Somebody who has not only a lot of influence, but a huge heart.
Right.
There's always people who are bending over backwards with the little that they have to help the kids, to do an after-school program, to give them snacks, to anything they can think of out of their own pocket. And what would happen if those people could actually have some support and have some voice? They could be kind of supercharged, right, in the neighborhood. And so the way I'm describing what we're doing in St. Louis right now is stabilizing the stabilizers, right? So if you can empower the stabilizers, they're the ones who are going to say, oh, now I can really help my whole street. And they will. They're just the kind of people who do that. You can't sort of stop them.
I think they're going to do it anyway.
I think of my friend Keisha, who has chronic health problems and has a daughter and three grandchildren, but still adopted an autistic woman who also has three children, and one of whom is autistic. And she has brought her into her own home and bends over backwards to take care of her. If I had chronic health problems, I wouldn't be taking on an extra family. But Keisha does. I mean, she's just not going to leave this woman in the cold. She's not going to do it. And so what if you were to come in and support Keisha in running transitional housing and her dreams, right, of what she wants to do as a caseworker? Oh, my goodness, the good she can do.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's what we're working on doing, is empowering the Josephs.
And therefore, what you're advocating for is breaking away from a stereotypical narrative, but also rewriting the narratives of, first of all, welfare thought, the thought of establishing welfare. And so for all of our listeners right now, in rethinking their own charitable giving and their engagement in welfare, we have about 30 seconds. Just very quickly, a word of advice, if you will, on how to rethink and how to act rightly in accordance with poverty as a problem.
Yeah, let me just give you a really simple solution. Go to truecharity.us. Go to their website. True Charity helps churches and nonprofits to flip their model away from a handout to an exchange, so that you're honoring the dignity of the people you're working with, but also you're helping them literally transform their lives as opposed to just survive. And there's so many great resources. Just grab them and do it.
Rachel, always enjoy speaking with you. Thank you for making the time.
Thank you. This has been fun.
My guest has been Dr. Rachel Ferguson, Professor of Business and Assistant Dean, Director of the Center for Free Enterprise at Acton University 2025, coming to you. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.